This is a Defocus Media production.
This is Lunch Date with Rachel and Kate, a Defocus Media production. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Kate.
What is happening, Kate Ham?
Well, Rachel, I'm in St. Louis now.
Oh.
I had to leave my parents in Springfield.
Where are you right now? What clinic?
I am at Affinia Healthcare, which is really great, and I actually really enjoy it. And even though I only see like 4 to 5 to 6 patients a day, it's good. It's good. I like that I get to just kind of do my thing, and I get to work hard, and the patients are always really interesting, and they always are like, oh my goodness, I'm just so glad that you're becoming an eye doctor. Like, you're so good at this. And so I don't know if they've just had really bad eye doctors before or if I am kind of okay.
You are.
Yeah, sometimes I don't feel that way, but there's lots of times that I do as well.
When I was at Affinia, I got really into the escape room down the street. Do you think you'll do it too?
We are not sure. We actually discussed that the other day in clinic. Because we saw that you guys had gone to the escape room. So we figured, okay, this is a thing we should do. But I don't know. I don't know. We're also hitting springtime where there's warm weather.
You can have outdoor adventures with your friends.
Tell me about Marion. Anything exciting?
No, the man is after me. I got pulled over in a parking lot. Okay, I swear to the Lord, in driver's ed, we were taught that stop signs and parking lots are just decoration. Like, I thought there was no law, no rules, just right. The parking lot's stop signs were, like, part of the store. I just felt like it was, like, a gentleman's agreement that I was abiding by. All right, so I was I got pulled stop over in the parking lot.
A gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. In a parking lot. But anyway, so I was in the parking lot at the VA, and there was nobody around. And so I, like, slowed down to turn right, but I didn't stop all the way. And out of friggin' nowhere, this this policeman comes over and is like, pulls me over. And he's like, do you know why I pulled you over? And I was like, honestly, I have no idea.
You had a gentleman's agreement with the stop sign, so you're fine. It wasn't written.
Anything goes in a parking lot. So I understand that this week is part one of two of something exciting. Maybe you should tell me what's for lunch. What's on the menu?
So today, the menu includes salad. This may seem like...
safe?
Yes, because it is. Salad is a safe option when you're on an interview.
Yeah, I agree. That is a very safe option. So today, we are so lucky to get to talk to Dr. Linda Luciano. Take it away.
I am so glad that we have our special guest today. I first want to just like welcome you to the podcast. We're so excited to have you today.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate being here.
Well, I want to first have you tell a little bit about yourself so that our listeners can kind of get a good feel of what got you to where you are today and different experiences you may have had.
Thanks so much for asking. When I graduated from college, I started out as an assistant manager of an insurance company. And after a few years, I decided to leave. And in between that time, I had earned my master's in marketing. And I decided to leave and go to New York City and work in a bank. And I was there for a few years, and the department decided to move to Delaware, and I lived in New Jersey, and I didn't want to relocate. So I came back to New Jersey and opened up an employment practice, and I helped people find jobs. And it was interesting because I really liked helping them find jobs, but it was the early 90s when companies decided that they didn't want to pay me for my services anymore, so I had to find another job. The great news was that during that time, I had made some connections, and one of the connections was with a woman who worked for a children's hospital, which was affiliated with the University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey. And she told me about an opening that they were having at the National Pediatric HIV Resource Center. So I interviewed for the position, and I was very persistent. I interviewed in April. And every 2 weeks, I kept calling and asking them if they had made a decision. They had not made a decision. So finally, the end of May, I suggested that they hire me as a temporary employee. They agreed. I was a temporary project manager. For 3 months, I was in that role. And then eventually, they hired me as a permanent employee. 11 years later, I'd worked my way through the system of University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey and became the chief operating officer of the medical school. It was a job I absolutely loved. I worked with the department administrators. I worked with the faculty. I reported to the dean. It was a fabulous position. Unfortunately, a new dean came in. As often happens, leadership changes, and he wanted to bring in his own staff. So I left. I was out of work for 9 months, and it was a long 9 months. I did a lot of networking, and this was before LinkedIn, so I literally met with 100 people, and I connected with over 600 people. I finally found a job at a medical education company, but I quickly learned that it was not the right culture, not the right fit for me. I left after 14 months and then went to work for a nonprofit, again working in the higher education space, which I absolutely loved. During that period of time, the president of Berklee College recruited me out to be his chief of staff and the director of strategic planning. Eventually, I became the vice president of planning and his chief of staff. Once again, in 2015, a new president came in and I was out of work. The good news was I had earned my doctorate during that period of time. I had my doctorate from the University of Pennsylvania in higher education management. And I started looking for work again in the higher education field. Although I did okay, the first interview I had, which was after 6.5 years, I realized that, oh my goodness gracious, I did very poorly on that interview. So what I tell my clients is you really need to practice your interview skills. Even if you've been on the other side of the table for years, which I have been, I know how to interview very well, but I need to practice. So I practiced and eventually did very well on an interview, but I wasn't finding work. I hired a coach, a couple of coaches, and I realized that what I really liked to do was help other women find their place in their career. So in 2017, I opened Career Coaching for Linda and have focused on women in academia, although I do help women leaders also, women leaders or women aspiring to be leaders. And the best news is that my clients are very happy with the services, and I get so ecstatic when they find what they're looking for. It's either a new job, it's relocating, or having the voice amplified, which is interesting in and of itself. So that's what I like to do, and that's why I do it.
Wow. Your story is just incredible to hear all the places you've been and how you're able to advocate for women in like every sector of the world, whether that's medically, professionally, in a leadership role. But I know we have some more questions about interviewing.
There are many optometrists who are interested in looking into academia. How is academia different from other workplaces?
Well, in academia, there's shared governance, and that means faculty, university leadership, and the trustees board, they all have a voice. Whereas in, suppose it's a small practice, an optometrist practice, the employees are not going to have a voice in what's being done in that organization. Also in academia, there are possibly more levels of decision making. It really depends on the project that's being considered. So suppose there's a new academic program. I know this because I'm the vice chair of the board of trustees of Colville University, and also I am the chair of the academic affairs committee. So I know that when a new program is suggested to the university, it has to go to the chair of the department, possibly the faculty council, the provost, and then the president's cabinet. And then, of course, the academic affairs committee of the board and then approved by the full board. So there is a process that could be long, whereas in smaller organizations or even in corporate America, the process is probably quite a bit different.
Is there any general advice for optometrists who want to advance in academia?
The most important thing is to look at the requirements at their institution to see what is required. And then another tip would be to look for the person who's in power to make things happen, to help the individual navigate through the system, serving on the right committees, chairing committees, be seen by the power brokers, because you want advocates. Advocates are people who are going to talk about you behind closed doors and make sure that you are made aware of what the opportunities are for you. And really tell the people who are in positions of authority that you are good and you should be promoted. And then one of the other things that I recommend is really establish relationships early on in your career. I have a friend who is a dean of an institution, and he told me that he made a connection 20 years ago, and because of that connection 20 years ago, he was awarded that deanship. It's because of the networking that was involved, being aware of the opportunities. And another thing that I tell people is networking is not one and done. It's not transactional. It's really about establishing relationships. You have years to create these relationships. But if you start now and you make sure that every 6 months you keep in touch with an individual, that's how you create those relationships.
Wow, that was such a good reminder of the right way to network. So sometimes when you coach with students or recent grads, do you have a question that comes up again and again?
So in the past, I have conducted more than 300 mock interviews with students, graduates, and professionals, people who are already in the field, they're seasoned professionals. And even with them, with myself too, if you haven't interviewed in years, you need to practice, because knowing what the questions are or anticipating the questions, if you say it out loud, even if you're practicing in front of a mirror, it's really important to hear your voice and hearing how you put a sentence together. So that's the advice that I would give them.
So what is your favorite and your least favorite common interview question? Favorite first.
Favorite one I like is, why are you the right person for this position? Or why did you apply for this position? Or why are you here today? Any one of those questions, you could answer the same way. It gives you the opportunity to be able to highlight every single item that they had in the job description. And by doing that, matching your experience and credentials to what they're seeking gives you a leg up on everyone else, because it tells them a couple things. One is that you remember what the job description asked for. You know your experience and expertise. You know how to match the two of them and to respond to the question appropriately. If someone came in and I asked the question, why are you here today? And they look at me, which has happened in the past, it's like, well, I'm here for the interview. No, I want you to say to me, I'm here for the assistant professor position at your university because, and then go into why they're the right person for the job. So I just think it gives them such a great opportunity to be able to shine in the interview. And it's the first question up, and it sets the tone for the interview.
Okay, so what's your least favorite?
Yes, the least favorite is, what are your weaknesses? I don't like that question. It's because what will a person really say? They're going to say, what I coach people to say, is tell me something that we can make into a positive. So if someone says they're too detail oriented, the interviewer can think, well, that might be a good thing if I'm looking for a researcher, or it's not really a good thing if I'm looking for a leader, because a leader needs to be visionary. A leader needs to be a global thinker and not someone who's in the weeds. So if either one of you have the opportunity to be an interviewer in the future, think about that and don't ask this question.
You've also written a very excellent article about not asking permission to speak. And that's something that us as women sometimes struggles with, because we say, oh, is it our turn? Are there other things that women are asking permission to do that maybe we shouldn't be?
Well, I think that sometimes we ask permission to do our jobs. If you are given a job to do, you should not go to your boss and say, is it okay if I do it this way or that way? Instead, Take the power that you've been given by being given either the title or the work to do, and just go do it. So I'll give an example. When I was the chief operating officer of New Jersey Medical School, the 19 academic medical department heads reported indirectly to me. They didn't know they did, and I didn't tell them. There was no need to do that. But what I had to do, as assigned by my boss, who was the dean, was figure out how to make the school more cohesive. So I initiated monthly meetings of all the department chairs, or the department administrators, I'm sorry, department administrators. And that had never happened before. So they came to the first meeting and they were a bit apprehensive. But what I did was I stood up at the first meeting and I said to them, I am here to serve you. And their mouths dropped open, because normally the dean's office always was in the position of asking for people to do things. Instead, I wanted to serve them. And as a result of that, they were happy to attend my meetings. We brought cohesiveness to the different departments. They started working together as a team, which again had never happened before. And this was all in 2002, I think. And I hear that the meetings continue to this day. I'm very proud of that legacy that I've left behind.
As you should be. That's incredible.
One of the things not to ask permission for is to invest in yourself. So if there is professional development money in the budget, ask about it. Ask if there's money there. And go and attend conferences or attend presentations that are appropriate to your field of study. And take advantage of those opportunities, because that's where you're going to meet people in your study who are going to help you in your future. Because there's a lot of us who don't stay in our companies for a long period of time. And the only way you're going to be able to advance your career is by knowing the right people. So if you're at these conferences and you're becoming known as an expert in your field, you're going to be sought after not only by executive search firms who attend the conferences too, but by colleagues that you've become known to.
All right. So I think this has been a terrific look into interviewing with Dr. Linda Luciano. Please be sure to tune in next week when we're going to talk about work culture.
Rachel, what did you take away from all these things that we learned from Dr. Luciano?
That I should do a lot of research into any job that I want so that I am prepared. I'm taking that away. What about you?
I am taking away to be confident in my skills and my interview, and like could be able, and like maybe practicing might be a good option. I've done interviews before, but sometimes in a more formal setting, it can be a little awkward. And so doing some mock interviews just might help bring up my confidence, because being confident when I walk in there will help me answer questions confidently, help me be myself easier. Like when I'm not worried about all these different things, I can just, it's easier to be myself.
Good.
So that's something that I'm going to take away. And I guess it's kind of my action item. I'm going to practice before I do an interview. I think practicing is a really great way to kind of make sure things, you know, you're feeling your best self. Do you have any action items you're going
to
take away?
Yeah, my action item is if I ever have to interview a person, like if I'm ever hiring someone, I'm going to really think about what I want to know about them. I'm not just going to look up on the internet like common interview questions, because then I'll end up like, oh, well, I know what their greatest weakness is, but who really cares? Like, I'm going to ask real questions that like get me to know what I need to know about the person. That's my action. Yeah.
I think that's really great. Well, like we said, we're not done with the show here, folks. This is just part one of two. So join us next week as we talk to Dr. Linda Luciano again.
The thrilling conclusion.
About work culture and kind of figuring out when it's time to say goodbye and when it's time, things you should know and pick up on when you're interviewing and kind of getting to know a workplace before you step foot in there, or how to kind of learn about the workplace once you get there. So I think you guys will get a lot. I know she has a lot of information about this, so.
Yeah, until next time.
Bye.
Bye.